ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm Clint Jasper, and you're listening to A Big Country. Thanks for joining me. This week, we're heading to a tiny town on the edge of the Nullarbor Plain, where we'll meet a woman who swapped paying rent in the city for owning her own place, buying what she believes could be the country's cheapest home. We'll visit a Tasmanian berry farm where customers can pick their own fruit by the bellyful. There's a huge variety to choose from, including some rare berries you may never have heard of. And we'll meet the educators working in some of the country's most remote classrooms. They're helping children living on outback stations with their studies and include a teacher from Germany who's enjoying a uniquely Australian experience.
Even when I tell them I'm in the outback, they're like, what is the outback? Like, and I'm like, okay, it's just in the middle of nowhere. I don't even know how to explain it, but it's such an amazing experience and I wouldn't change it for the world, you know? I wouldn't like to work like somewhere on the coast, on the cafe or something, which sounds pretty amazing as well, but it's just like not the same Aussie experience and I really wanna, yeah, soak it in.
Discovering the joy of living in the middle of nowhere. We'll find out what's involved in working as a governess on a remote station. That's coming up. First today, for 100 years, the Country Women's Association has been a fixture of rural life in farming communities. But with farms getting bigger and rural populations declining, some local branches have been in danger of folding due to low membership. That was the case for one branch in a small town a few hundred kilometres south of Perth, until one young determined member decided to do something about it. Andrew Chowding has the story.
I think the CWA is an important part of our community and always has been, and so iconic, and it would be really sad to see it go.
3 years ago, the Country Women's Association in the West Australian wheatbelt town of Darkin was on the cusp of closing. That was until Bonnie Teffler came along.
There were four members. They couldn't continue due to health reasons, so they put out in our local paper they needed more members, otherwise the CWA in Darkin was going to close. So I saw that in the paper and Mum and I messaged everyone that we knew in town that thought would be able to help, and everybody came down to the CWA building and yeah, then we took it over from there.
The 23-year-old may not seem like your typical CWA deputy president, but her modern approach has attracted more than one-third of the townswomen to the historic association.
We're not as traditional as other branches, so we've done lots of amazing things. Workshops, we do a cake stall for Anzac Day usually, which attracts lots of people. We have our big International Women's Day event, which we held for the first time last year and was a huge success. So we've got that coming up again on the 6th of March. This year, with guest speakers, everyone gets to dress up, beautiful food and venue. It's also just a chance for women to get together and just be themselves. Like, they don't have to be the mother or the teacher, whoever they are. In the community, we can just come together and get to know other people. Like, I've become close with people that I wouldn't normally be close with if it wasn't for the CWA, so I think it's been really good.
One of those women is Darkin's primary school principal and new branch president, Eloisa Goss.
For us, it's all about fun and friendship and bringing women together, particularly rural women, and giving them an opportunity to come together in our meetings where we'll have dinner and maybe some drinks, have lots of conversations and support everybody. We're trying to attract younger members and particularly young mums, so that they can learn from maybe some of the older women in our community, and they can rely on those women for support, because particularly women in regional areas, like a lot of them have married into the farming community, so they're not going to have their support network, their own personal family close to them. So we've got a couple of members who have got little babies, and for them, their parents are either interstate or in the metro area. And so they've been able to connect with some older women who've already had children and then provide them with some support.
For a branch that was teetering on the edge of irrelevance, Darkin's resurgence comes at an auspicious time for the association in WA, which this year celebrates its centenary. And with 100 years under its belt, State CEO Trish Langdon says the change in Darkin showed the old institution could still learn some new tricks.
Come on, girls, come up to the table. Let's keep things rolling, please. It's incredibly exciting, and we're absolutely thrilled about how that happened. And I think it was like a model that we can employ in other places. And I think what it is it's about communicating to younger people that we are still relevant for them. And what we know, we've got data that shows us that some women join when they retire because they're sort of used to being really busy and they want to continue to contribute to the community. Then you've got younger ones, say in their 20s, who want to become involved in the community, and they use the CWA as this kind of way of getting into the community. And then we've got women who are isolated at home with children, looking after kids, and they want to meet other mums in that sort of circumstance. So there's many different ways, but what brings them together is a sense of, I call it purposeful friendship. It's not just a matter of getting together and having, you know, scones and tea. It's actually about how can we make the world a better place? How can we make our community really be responsive? How can we have a thriving community? And Darkin is just that. So the ladies and the women that join Darkin are great believers in their own community and that the CWA's got an integral part of that community. And that is the values from the very beginning. So they've emulated the beginning of the CWA.
We're in two rows of tay berries, which in my opinion are our best berry.
What is a tay berry?
It's a hybrid raspberry blackberry berry. It's sweet and aromatic and delicious. It has a very short season. It's has to be picked by hand and it's very thorny, so that's why it's not very often grown as a commercial crop.
Berry grower Olivia Rundle is busy picking fruit here at her farm at Barrington in northwest Tasmania.
It's just me picking at the moment, as well as people coming and picking their own.
Okay. No, you've got a job ahead of you for sure.
Absolutely, I can't keep up.
Hello, I'm Meg Powell, and Olivia Rundle is showing me around her rows of berry canes laden with a wide range of fruits, including some you've probably never heard of.
So these are our gooseberries, which at the moment are green. Some of them are just starting to turn colour. So ours are a red. We are pretty sure they're the Captivator variety, which is a French variety. And they don't have thorns, so they're quite pleasant to pick, unlike some other gooseberries.
They're cute. They look like little grapes.
Yes.
Single.
And when they're red, they taste a little bit like a table grape. So they're not really, really tart.
Mm.
Mm. So this patch we're coming into now, we call the pigeon patch because there's an old pigeon loft in the middle of it. And again, real diversity here. So we've got another big blueberry enclosure. We've got black currants, tart cherries, raspberries, a few red currants, and then a big patch of sylvan berries, which are absolutely delicious at the moment. So the sylvan berry is our early ripening blackberry, but they're actually a boysenberry crossed with a marionberry. And a marionberry is described as the Cabernet of blackberries. So it's quite tasty. We have a few of those. They're a mid-season fruit, but the sylvan berry fruits well all for a long season. I'm really happy with how I pruned these this year because they're actually much easier to pick than last year. So that's just one of the many things I've learnt in a year and a half on this farm.
Experience that comes, with time.
Yes, correct. So would you like to try...
I couldn't think of anything I want to do more.
So that one's looking good. So you're looking for the really big, plump ones.
That is a good... That's an interesting flavour.
Yes.
It tastes completely different to the other berries.
The tay berry, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But this is my other favourite, the tay berry and the sylvan berries. Blueberries are a long-term favourite. Ours aren't quite
They're
ready
old
yet.
Hat.
But they're a lot easier to grow than the rubus species, which are just so fragile and are short keeping. So that's one of the reasons we want to be a pick your own focused farm. You know, we're small, it's a beautiful environment, it's quite therapeutic wandering around here, but also berries are so much better straight off the cane, and so we want people to be able to have that experience. So you know, one option is to charge by the belly full, so people don't even have to pretend they're going to get any in a bucket, they can just eat their fill.
Risky, I can eat a lot of berries, yeah. I think.
I know, but that's okay. So long as people are enjoying them, we've got lots of berries to share. These berries are loganberries, so they are like the tay. They're a hybrid between a raspberry and a blackberry. These ones happened by accident in the garden of US Supreme Court Judge Logan. He was an amateur horticulturalist who was trying to develop a superior kind of blackberry, which he eventually did, but I haven't found out which blackberry was his. But the loganberry was a happy accident when he planted some raspberries a bit close to his blackberries. But he was a bit excited because he named them after himself.
What did you call it before? The white man's privilege berry.
Yes, that's what I think of. But the loganberry is very popular. It is a little bit more acidic than the tay. They both are quite fragile berries.
You've got a lot going on here for such a small farm, Olivia. Is that to do with making this place financially viable?
That's correct. So we have about 3 acres of fruit on a 10-acre property. We're very small. I have seen the statistics that are gathered about farms by the Productivity Commission, define a small farm as anything under 100 acres.
Okay, so well and truly under that, yes.
Correct. So we're still working out how to make this financially sustainable. We're committed to it being environmentally sustainable, how we farm. We're committed to the how we farm, but we have to work out how to best use our time and how we are going to fit into the local food system.
Olivia Rundle from Plump Berries in Northern Tasmania. She was showing reporter Meg Powell around her rows of fruit. You can see more on that story, including photos of some of the more unusual varieties that Olivia and her partner Aaron are growing. Look for it on the A Big Country homepage on the ABC website at abc.net.au. I'm Clint Jasper with you for A Big Country. Still to come, we'll meet some of the governesses who are helping station kids learn from home through the School of the Air program. And we're heading to the Western Australian goldfields where former Sydney sider Elise McDonough believes she's bought the cheapest house in Australia. Reporter Julia Bertolio visited Elise in the $12,000 home that she's very proud of, but she discovered it needs a bit of work to come up to the standard that most of us are used to.
It's 42 degrees in Norseman, at the edge of the Nullarbor, and Alice McDonough is trying to keep herself and her dog, Fifi, cool with wet cloth.
This is my air conditioning. It's called muslin cloth.
Alice's house does not have air conditioning. It's also not connected to mains power, and to get water, she needs to venture out into the backyard.
So it's a little bit of a fixer-upper. Basically no funds to do the ceiling, connect to power, do any plumbing work. So I've just done my own things that have worked. Sort of like camping, only you've got a roof over your head.
Just not a full ceiling.
There's a few issues with this house, but that's quite okay. Up behind me, we're missing a bit of roof, but that we're going to fix with some cardboard.
Alice says she has everything she needs. And when the electrician told her she could not connect her house to the grid, she did not dismay.
Well, well, you know, most people would like to have a ceiling. Most people would like to have some aircon. Most people would like running water, which I sort of have. When in actual fact, all I needed to buy was some portable power stations and some solar panels, all portable, and that solved my problem. And the sun, I need the sun.
With those, she can have light and cook.
Look at my egg, oh my gosh.
And charge the computer she uses to work from home.
As long as the sun is shining, I'm fine. I've got electricity. Power, no problems. Money, if I could grow money from pointing a solar panel at the sky, I would love that. You know what I mean?
Money has always been a source of stress for Alice and the reason behind her move from Sydney to outback Western Australia.
All my money was going to rent and I just wanted to stop paying rent. It was extremely stressful. I think I was working more than one job and then plus paying bills and everything else. It was just a little bit too much. And I was like, I don't want to live like this. So I was living in Sydney, but I wanted to find the cheapest house in Australia. So I did an internet search and I found the cheapest house in Australia, which was this one, $12,000. And then there, at that time, there's first home buyer's grant. So it made it $5,000 all up for a house. And that's when I first looked at it and went, this may solve my problems or may cause more problems, who knows? At the very least, it was going to be an adventure.
Alice enjoyed the adventure, but was not immune to culture shock.
In Sydney, you see everybody, all sorts of people. In Norseman, you see the same ones every day because there's about 200 or 300 people. So it's very different. Suddenly you're in this whole new world. Like, this is a world of its own. It's not like any other world that you may imagine if you live in a capital city and have never lived in the outback at all.
After 5 years in Norseman, Alice decided to give city life another go.
Then I went to Perth and started doing exactly the opposite of what I came here to do, which was pay all this money for rent. It was about the same as what I was paying in Sydney, believe it or not. So it was about $360. But the last couple of years, it's gone up by about $200 a week where I was living. And the owner had sold my house. And I was looking at all the real estate websites and it was like what I was renting was $500, $600 a week. And I'm like, there's no way. I can't. I'm going to be homeless if I don't sort this out immediately, you know. But given I had a dog and me and limited funds, I thought, what can I do? And I thought I'll buy my house back and then I don't have to worry about this worsening real estate situation.
Alice spent all her savings, about $12,000, to buy her old Norseman home back. Now, there are a few things she does not have, but she's glad they include a mortgage, rent, bills, and getting yelled at by customers in a job she hates.
Working jobs, particularly jobs you don't like, is really, really hard on your mental health. Working a job or two jobs and all that money going on rent and other expenses is not good for one's mental health. When you don't have to worry about all that stuff, there's a whole lot of pressure that's been lifted. So that's what was important to me.
Alice has found her solar-powered light at the end of the housing crisis tunnel. But too many Australians are struggling in substandard housing. WA Council of Social Service Acting CEO Rachel Stewart says people with health conditions are particularly vulnerable.
There is a lot that needs to be done around substandard housing, particularly in extreme weather conditions, for example, like we're having now. It is extremely difficult in substandard housing. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are in substandard accommodation and are really doing it really, really tough.
In Norseman, Alice says she found ways to cope with the heat wave.
So that's how she stays cool and how I stay cool.
Such a good year.
With the new school year well underway, governesses have started settling in to their new outback lives. Employed on remote properties to assist the families in facilitating the School of the Air program, governesses, most commonly women, are often completing gap years or have previous teaching experience.
Oh, I'm a teacher actually from South Australia and last year I was up in the Northern Territory teaching in an Aboriginal community. So yeah, my husband and I have travelled here together. He's working as a station hand and I'm the governess.
Hi, I'm Lily McCure, and I'm in Broken Hill, chatting with the new governesses who have arrived in far west New South Wales, ready to embrace outback life on remote properties. I'm speaking with Michelle Williams, a teacher from Narracourt, South Australia, who was 18 when she first got a taste of working as a governess.
So back 30 years ago, it was basically everything turned up in a box and you just had like a booklet for English and a booklet for maths and whatever, and there was just VHF radios, so you had to get on. I think he only got on like 3 or 4 times a week, and you know, he had to do his call sign, you know, David Brown at Rihola Station, over, and then the teacher would come on and say his name, so only one person could speak at a time, so we'd have to go around to each child, you know, around the district. So that was very funny, and if you missed it, it was too late, you know. So very old school, but the teacher would come out and stay with the family once a term and things like that. We didn't come into town anywhere near as much as they do now to catch up with the other kids either, so it's much, much more social now for the kids. Obviously, there was no such thing as computers back then, so there was nothing like that. So now it's all much more online. Obviously, they do still send out work, but it's different, much more hands-on, a lot more vibrant.
Now, some 30 years later, she is back working for the same family, a generation apart.
We love remote living and we love the bush and just the experience and the fact that I knew the family, I think, and I know they're such a gorgeous family, and I wanted to support them to raise their children and give their children a really good education, because I know that's important to them, and being a qualified teacher, being able to bring that extra knowledge to support their children's education, I think is important to them, so I wanted to support them in that. I love the fact that the way of life is unique. Not everyone even gets to see it or experience it. I guess it is the wide open spaces and the different way of earning money for the families. And then for us, it's just, a privilege, I think, to be invited into their homes and their way of life, and to get to support them in making their living the way they're doing it, I guess.
Merle Flensel has travelled from Germany to become a governess. Having studied teaching in Cologne, Germany, Merle wanted to see Outback Australia while gaining professional experience. 3 weeks in, and she's very happy with her decision.
I love the Outback life, even though it's like kind of like in the middle of nowhere, of course, but especially this week, I get to know a lot of people and I love it.
What have you found about the people out here?
Honestly, it's so much different than in Germany or anywhere else. The people are just so open and friendly and open-minded and just always have a smile on their faces. So that's what I really enjoy, and I feel like I want to stay here.
And so you're going to be working with a family on a station. How far is that from Broken Hill, and what sort of stuff are you going to be doing?
So the station is actually only an hour away from Broken Hill, so that's pretty close in comparison to other stations that I've heard of. Yeah, and I'm just going to be teaching the kids in the classroom at home and helping out with, you know, looking after the kids and stuff.
And how long will you be staying out here for, do you think?
So I've only planned to stay here for 4 months, but I'm already planning to extend my stay because it doesn't feel like long enough. So probably for like 2 terms, or we'll see what happens.
And any other things, like outside of your work on the station, what else are you sort of looking forward to about living out here?
So I'm really excited to like meet up with the govies that I just met in this week, for example, or just go for, you know, a couple of drives around, and I've seen so many kangaroos and I'm so excited because I've never seen them anywhere else, you know. So I'm excited about the wildlife or the sunsets. Just a nice time also with the family.
How do you go about explaining where you are to your friends and family back in Germany? Is it pretty sort of hard to describe?
I think like even when I tell them I'm in the Outback, they're like, what is the Outback? Like, and I'm like, okay, it's just in the middle of nowhere. I don't even know how to explain it, but it's just so amazing. Mm-hmm. And people like keep asking me like why I'm even doing it because it's so isolated. But I just don't even know how to explain it, but it's such an amazing experience and I wouldn't change it for the world, you know. I wouldn't like to work like somewhere on the coast on the cafe or something, which sounds pretty amazing as well, but it's just like not the same Aussie experience, and I really want to soak it in.
How did you hear about that, I guess, Aussie experience? Like, what made you think, oh, I need to get away from the cities and get out into the rural areas?
Yeah, I just heard a lot about, you know, Outback life, and I just really wanted to dive in and see what it's like. And I really, as I said, I really like the people's mindset and like that they're so happy over here.
Merla Flensel, who trained as a teacher in Germany, she was speaking with Lily McClure in far west New South Wales, where she's taken up a job working as a governess on a remote farming property. More on that story and all of the stories you've heard on today's program, you'll find all the links you need on the ABC website at abc.net.au. Just search for A Big Country. That's the show for today. I'm Clint Jasper, and I'll chat to you again next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.